My name is D. Thomas Kincaid. I am 91 years old. Today's date is 6/7/22. We are here in Lake Geneva Library, and my relationship to Joyce Pagel has just been a very good friend.
My name is Joyce Pagel. I am 76 years old. Today's date is June 7th, 2022. We are at the Lake Geneva Library, and Tom Kincaid is a very good friend of mine.
The reason that I'm here is Lake Geneva has been a very special place way back in prehistory. The lake itself has been a very good area for sports. I'm certain that our former tribal Americans that actually discovered this, one of their favorite sports and activities certainly had to be swimming. And if they're swimming, they must be also competitive, so that they were probably racing. And so I think that sports now are such a bigger thing with canoes and power boats and sailboats and water skiing and sailing and so forth. The Lake Geneva area is popular from virtually all around the world for its beauty and for its many activities that are allowed here. Many years ago, my three friends and I, Bob Abel, Bob Bush, and Bill Freitag, and myself, were had an aquaplane. And this was a big board about the size of a coffee table with two big ropes coming out that had handles. So it was relatively easy standing on this and being pulled by a powerboat that would go fast enough that we could actually get up on the surface. Then just dragging behind for, you know, many times, we found out that we could actually tip the aquaplane over on the corner and actually go outside the wake. And then we could tip it on the other side, and we could come back not just on the wake, but we could cross on the other side of the wake. So for a long time, this was really the sport on Lake Geneva. So one of the boys, and it was not me, heard of this new invention of water skis, like the snow skis, but a little wider, a little longer, that actually would suffice for skiing on water. So we chipped all of our money together, and we ordered this really nice pair of water skis. They were made out of wood, and they were colored red. That's the good news. The bad news is we kept dragging behind the boat and trying to find out how in the heck do you get up on the surface. Because every time the boat started off with enough speed to pull us up on the surface, we would pull on the ropes, and immediately our water skis would flip up in front of us, and we'd end up on our back. Mm-hmm. So this kept going and going and going. And so this one day, it was my turn, and I was on the water skis, and I thought, well, I'm just not going to pull. I'm just going to let the power of the boat pull me up. And suddenly, I was water skiing. So I'm very certain that I am the very first person to water ski on Lake Geneva. Now, the reason that I know this is because we were still aquaplaning all over the lake, from our place in in Williams Bay, all the way to Fontana, down through the lake to Lake Geneva, and back through the bay. Never ever did we see anybody other than aquaplanes. So my three friends and I, and unfortunately they're all passed, but we would have big arguments as to who was the very first one to water ski. Now, all my three friends knew it was me, but just to make me mad, they would claim that, no, they were the ones to water ski. But I always wanted to know, where did those water skis go? And because I thought this was took place, I think, about right after World War II. So it was like, 1944, 1945, something like that. And we were all just, you know, teenagers. I always wondered years and years, 15, 20, 25 years later, I always wondered I wanted to see those water skis again, just for old time's sake. And I had, lived in Houston and San Antonio all during World War II, and in Sarasota, Florida for many years. And so I never really knew what happened to them. And one of the boys said, my mother put those up in the attic of our home in Williams Bay. So I went up there and to see these treasures, and was becoming so excited. And I looked up there and I couldn't find them, so I kept looking around, and all of a sudden, nailed up, they had the tips cut off, and they were one of the boys' mothers used those for bookshelves up there. So that was the end of our treasures.
So you never saw anyone else water skiing on regular skis while you were out on the lake?
The next summer or after that, but never prior to that.
Not before. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So indeed, it sounds like you were the first to water ski. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's your favorite spot to water ski when you were a kid? Did you go to other countries?
Later, when I was living in Florida and being a water skier, I went to Cypress Gardens, which is the place for water skiing. And I had just become licensed as an architect, and I opened my firm in Winter Haven, Florida, where Cypress Gardens is. And my first wife actually was a national champion and the skiing ballerina, the one that would do the backward swan with the toe hold. And we unfortunately had a divorce here a while back. But very oftentimes I would be sitting in my office, maybe not too busy, and all of a sudden I would get a call from the owner, Dick Pope Sr. And he said, "Hey, Tom, Carlo cannot make it. Can you? I said, "Great." So I closed the office, quickly drove the couple miles out to Cypress Gardens, changed, and was in the next two shows. Mm-hmm. And later, as I kept going, and I'm always very a combative person, but I went to the National Water Ski Show in I can't remember the town, Lake Winnipesaukee, I forget where that is, in New Hampshire somewhere. And I was able to do the highest trick run in the history, and no one to date has ever exceeded the points that I had. And a water ski competition, there's long jumping, there's tricks, and there's slalom. So you can be a national champion in any one of those three, or you can be an overall champion. When I first started jumping, we would the boats could always go 35 miles an hour, but any of us that were really into this could hear how fast that boat was. So we would do this to get 36 miles an hour. So here would be the jump, and the boat would go right like this, and so we were back of the boat on a 75-foot line tow rope. So the boat would go right by the jump. We would just come over here and just go over the jump. So we were getting maybe 40 or 50 feet. So then one of my good friends at Cypress Gardens found out that if he had the boat out here about 70, 60 feet away and would come up, he could rock up and down on the wake and then just at a certain time cut and go off. So that just about doubled. So we were able to get to, rather than just 35 miles an hour, we could be going 50 or 60. So then another person about 4, 5, 6 years later from the gardens found out that not only could he get the boat going like this, but that person, his name was Carlos Mendoza, he was from Mexico, he would get out here way on this side, and at a certain point, this was really dangerous too, he would cut, put a shoulder on the water, and just slap across both wakes, go across here. And when we were doing this, never ever could we get off the top of the jump. We would usually just about get off here. And it's very dangerous because you're going like 70 or 80 miles an hour. And several times I had to lift one ski, you know, to get on. Several years after coming back here, I got a call from Tommy Bartlett. And Tommy said that they were really had heard about my, you know, all my tricks and so forth, and because I was the very first one to do turnarounds on barefoot, I was the fifth one to do a 1 foot, and barefoot basically is very easy, and so I was invited by Tommy Bartlett to come up and be the skiing director, which I did for 3 years. And this is a photograph. Oh, okay.
And that was at the Wisconsin Dells, correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. Wisconsin Dells. So for 3 summers, I was the skiing director for Tommy Bartlett. And Tommy Bartlett was just a really interesting, nice guy. And it's kind of a shame that that show is no longer in. Mm-hmm. In being. I have not water skied in several years because I'm an older guy, 91 years old, and I know that my legs are no longer strong enough to water ski, but I have a lot of good memories.
Mm, that sounds great. Do you have any other adventures with water, or it was basically water skiing?
My trick run, which in the trick run there's an entry gate, and if you want to there's a jump, and then there's an exit gate, so you get 2 runs through the trick course. The first run I would have my 2 pair of turnaround skis. I would go through the gate. The minute I was through the gate, I would do 180, 180, 180, 180, turning each way. And then I would slowly do a 360 degree without stopping, landing up at the jump. And I did a 740 degree turn, landing forward. And then I would do 180, 180, 360. And then as I went out the gate from about here to the desk, I would do a side slide and ski totally sideways out the gate on the first run. The second run was 1 ski, and virtually it was the very same thing, except on the jump, I did with 1 ski, did a 540 degree turn landing backwards, and that's still the highest point of any trick that water skiers can do. Can I do it again? I don't think so.
And you were a swimmer as well in college, I believe.
Yes, I was. I lettered as a swimmer and a diver at the University of Iowa, and I was really like second or third string because we had the Dr. James Councilman was the quintessential swimming coach of all time, and he could actually recruited some of the best and fastest swimmers all over the world, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was certainly not, I lettered in swimming and diving, but Wally Riss was our Olympic champion. And he was the very first one to break 50 seconds in the 100. Yeah. I could do all of the dives, but I was like 6'1" then. Mm-hmm. And in order to really look good, you've got to be about 5'7". Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So basically, I do everything, but I never look
you
good.
Didn't look
so,
good.
No. But also, one of my good friends, Bob Abel, that was with me, you know, when we first able to water ski, he was the very top wrestler, high school wrestler in Chicago area, and he taught me. During the summertime, when we were all together, some takedowns and some escapes. And so, I mean, I just enjoyed it. There's no way I could have made the wrestling program at Iowa, which is, I think they just went through 17 straight years of national championship. Yeah. But they had an intramural program. And one day I was sitting as a pledge in a fraternity, and the pledge captain said, is there anyone that knows anything about swimming and diving, and then anyone knows anything about wrestling? So I raised my hand and said, "Kincaid, you show up at 10 o'clock at the field house for intramural wrestling." Mm-hmm. So I did that. I learned not to raise your hand anymore. But I went through 4 years in three different weight categories, and I was never defeated, and I defeated every opponent as a pin.
Getting back to water skiing, how have skis changed through the years? Have you followed along with that to see how that works? Or... Mm-hmm. or not so much.
Not so much. I really haven't seen that many, you know, people really water skiing.
Sure. Okay.
So I'm not sure if lost popularity or
fiberglass.
Pardon?
Fiberglass.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're now fiberglass instead of wood. I understand.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, they'd be, you know, water skiing. In fact, the people coming up to my garage when the big garage doors open, and I've got my jump skis. Pegged up just for just for storage.
Sure.
And some of the people say, "Did they make water skis out of wood?"
Yes.
Kind of embarrassing.
Yes. So you're swimming. I remember you telling me about some trick you did diving or something that didn't, when you were at the University of Iowa. Didn't you do some kind of a dive or something?
Oh, well, yeah, at the University of Iowa, every year, the swimming and gymnastic teams had this dolphin show. And the dolphin was our swimming and fraternity. Mm-hmm. And so basically, and they still have it, no longer the dolphin show, but up on top of the big, huge swimming pool room is this cage. And it has a full three-catch aerobatics for aerialists. And so it was mostly the gymnastic, but since I was a diver, they kind of got me into it too. And so it was a three-catch just like circuses have, except we didn't have a net. We just 40 foot below, we had water. Mm. And so in order to get up to this, I had to go up this little teeny ladder up like four stories. And it was kind of shaky. Being swinging back and forth in the dark, like at night, that didn't bother me. But I was scared to death going up this damn ladder.
Yeah.
So was it a swan dive or was it a straight dive? Or did you do a backflip?
Oh, in diving competition, you have five dives that everybody has to do, and then you can have another two or three. And over the years, the laws have changed, so forth. So, you know, basically, the last two or three, we would, you know, go off. And some of the tougher ones was going off the board and actually going into a full twist, maybe a full twist. And at the same time you're twisting, you're also doing a somersault. Mm-hmm. And timing is so important. And I was, I think if I just came up there and just jumped off the end, I would probably be more worried too, because I'm used to, you know, timing it. Mm-hmm. And interesting enough, all in my 4 years at University of Iowa, we did not have one swimmer or diver from Iowa.
Oh, really?
Right.
Wow.
But we had seven from the islands, and the islands are just fantastic people. We've really kept very much in touch with each other. In fact, up until a couple of years ago, we had several of our reunions in Hawaii, and just had a lot of fun. But you know, I'm 91 years old now, and there's not one of my swim teammates left.
Oh, I imagine.
And I'm still in contact with their wives.
Oh, that's nice. So by the islands, you met the Hawaiian islands.
Yes,
correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What great stories.
This program is really, when I first heard about it, it was really exciting. Because, you know, there's so many things that can happen that are not going to be in a book.
That's right.
And whether what I have come up with or not, I'm not sure, but I'm sure that there's some really, really treasures. May I say one more thing that, are we finished now with this? Or?
No.
No, okay.
So, what do you do right now to keep yourself busy?
I am a four-time national winning architect. I've actually been invited to do projects in Canada, Belarus, Russia, and I actually had a branch office in Tokyo at the embassy for 3 years. And I am very heavily involved and have been for quite a few years now in these beautiful monolithic tensile concrete dome structures, because I really discovered here years ago that with global warming, that basically our building codes are no longer responding to today's violent weather. Okay. Look at what happened in Moore, Oklahoma, and Joplin, Missouri, that leveled, what, six or seven high schools, and not even a big tornado, a mid-level tornado. There's nothing more than about 8 or 10 inches of rubble above the ground. Fortunately, this happened 2 hours prior to class time, but I can do a new high school at least 25% less cost than any other permanent form of building in a third of the time. And our structures, our dome structures, would not know a 1,000-mile tornado was happening, because there's no way to put a load on them that would...
Mm-hmm.
Also, we are really concerned about sustainability now, or at least I am, but the populace really isn't. Because our domes have an equivalent insulating factor of between R70 and R80. So we know now that just the savings in energy in our dome equals the initial cost of the building in about 12 to 14 years. And the energy for a building like this is going to just keep on getting more and more expensive. But it's frustrating for me to keep seeing communities build these buildings like this that could easily get wiped to the ground. Look at what happened in just, what was it, last month in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how many deaths now, but we're just not paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the one, maybe the biggest thing in our nation, and I like to respond to a problem, one of the biggest needs in our nation right now basically is affordable, safe senior housing. I have come up with a 7-story dome with a big insulated skylight on top that would daylight this gorgeous atrium, just like in the beautiful five-star hotels. So the people there would have crowd distance because they would be at least 50 foot away from their neighbor. The acoustics in these domes are better than the finest opera house in Europe. And the sound is actually better than in the any of the places, you know, halls in Europe.
So far, you haven't had anyone wanting to build a dome lately, or
no? What I'm finding out, particularly in the Midwest, is that anything that they're not familiar with has got to be not too good. No matter how many benefits, they're going to want to have something that's rectilinear. And they've been used to being born in a box, growing up in a box, going to school in a box, work in a box, recreate in a box. And it's just beyond comprehension that anything could actually be a better. But the insurance, because our domes are indestructible and fireproof, the insurance costs are like a fraction of what they would normally be. Mm-hmm. The maintenance, and no one ever thinks about maintaining a building, mm-hmm. but the maintenance costs also are a fraction.
Okay. What do you think of the domes in Milwaukee? Three domes in Milwaukee.
I've just driven by them. I think they're fine, and I'm glad that at least somebody can put up a dome.
Mm-hmm. Gotta go see that.
Yeah. They're not like your domes, I don't believe, though. They're not thin shell concrete.
No, they're glass.
Yeah, it's a different kind.
Throughout history, the domes were extremely expensive to build simply because you had to build a wood or metal framework upon which you could do a dome on top. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to do it anymore because that airform that we have, and we can inflate. In fact, we start with a roof first. Domes are a roof first, which is the last thing you do on a building mm-hmm. like this.
Okay. So, 5 minutes.
5 minutes. I would like to really, I have thought of a book, and Joyce has helped me with it, because I was a terrible, disinterested grade school and high school student. The only thing that kept me in school basically were sports, because I was totally bored. I was sitting there wondering how I was going to attach the wing on my model airplane, or the next sketch of chicken or whatever I was, you know, or a building or whatever. And my mother and father were both school teachers, and so they heard quite frequently from their school teacher friends, little Tommy just doesn't seem to be part of the class. He just sits there and kind of daydreams. Well, I was totally bored. So in sixth grade, the teacher assigned a assignment on one of the most important people at that time. Mm-hmm. Oh. And so being a model maker, I made a scale model of Leonardo da Vinci's flying machine. Mm-hmm. I wish I had today. It was professional grade. Mm-hmm. I handed it in, and the teacher absolutely just got me up in front of the class and embarrassed me, saying, "Tommy Kincaid, when I give you an assignment, it is written. And I now give you two more days, and I want a 300-word written report on a famous person. I don't want 299. I don't want 301. I want a 300. And, you know, I mean, I was like, I was standing up in the class. And you should never, you know, done that.
No, never.
So I went to the library after that thinking, what am I going to do, you know? So I'm pulling books out, and I pulled this one book. It was all in Japanese kanji. So I thought, So I probably spent more time on that than would have taken on anything else. I had the whole, this 3 pages of Japanese kanji.
Sure.
And I handed it in. I got a B+.
And it was 300 pages, correct?
And, yeah, and she never, she no, it was 300 words.
Her words, I bet. I'm sorry, yeah. Yes.
And she never messed with me again.
Well, as a teacher, I would have been impressed with your model of the airplane. I mean, that's really impressive, I think.
Okay, so 10 seconds.
Okay, well.
Say goodbye.
Okay, very interesting speaking with you, Tom. I enjoyed hearing some of your stories.
Thank you very much. Actually, I've been contacted, and you've really helped me, Joyce. But I'm being considered as a distinguished graduate of the University of Iowa, and also I think that they're contacting me with the same thing with the University of Florida.
Oh, very good. That's impressive, I believe.
So, say goodbye.
Okay, Tom, we'll talk to you later. Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.